ॐ अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जलाशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधारा शिवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके डिड यू अटेंड मदर जी यस्टरडे?
Yes, attended.
Oh, you had attended. And so were you able to attend whole class or some of it?
Some of it, Prabhuji. I attended in
Achha,
the
okay. So
end.
the last part or the beginning?
The last part, last half of the part I attended.
अच्छा, ओके। सो हाउ डिड यू फाइंड इट?
या इट वाज वेरी गुड प्रॉपर्टी, वेरी नाइस।
ओके, हाउ मच डिड यू हियर? हाउ मच टाइम वर यू देयर?
आई थिंक आई हर्ड 30 मिनट्स प्रभुजी।
ऑन द लास्ट 30 मिनट्स?
या लास्ट 30 मिनट्स।
ओके, सो यू आर नॉट एबल टू जॉइन फॉर द एंटायर दिस थिंग?
यस प्रभुजी, बिकॉज़ माय डॉटर हैड अनदर, she had a class, so I completed that and then I joined.
Okay. And you joined directly on Facebook, or how
On
did you join?
Facebook, I joined through Facebook.
Acha, Facebook means you were just seeing the Facebook ISKCON Orlando Facebook page, from where you were viewing it.
Yes, Professor, I was hearing from you.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we had some difficulty in the beginning through Zoom. The voice was breaking a lot. Then that is the reason we had to switch from Zoom to Facebook. Yeah.
So this
So
part two
Prabhuji,
also, right, Prabhuji? Let's see.
okay. So Rajiv, yesterday.
At around 10:20, I कनेक्टेड टू फेसबुक. आपने इसमें कुछ लिंक डाला था ना इन द ग्रुप फेसबुक का. सो फ्रॉम
या
दैट
या
आई कनेक्टेड,
या
बट जो आवाज आ रहा था वो एकदम ब्रेक होके कट कट एकदम गार्बल्ड आवाज आ रहा था. सो आई कुडंट मेक मेक आउट इवन वन
राइट
वर्ड.
राइट
मतलब वो,
राइट
तो फिर वो आई थॉट मे बी बाद में आपका कभी कुछ रिकॉर्डेड वाला आएगा, सो मे बी वी कैन गो थ्रू दैट.
ओके ओके या एक्चुअली
नहीं था.
द प्रॉब्लम वो कल ही हुआ यस्टरडे. इनिशियली 15-20 मिनट्स, आई थिंक टिल हाफ एन आवर द टाइम गॉट वेस्टेड, बिकॉज आई केप्ट स्पीकिंग फॉर ऑलमोस्ट हाफ एन आवर, बट इन बिटवीन देर वर लॉट ऑफ देर वॉज लॉट ऑफ वॉइस ब्रेकिंग. सो देन डिवोटीज दे सेड दैट यू नो वेल वी कैन वी वोंट बी एबल टू हियर लाइक दिस. सो देन वी स्विच टू फेसबुक live and then it was proper. I think the video had some problem, the video was breaking but the voice was very clear, so we switched to that.
Okay.
Okay,
Maybe
anyways,
15 minutes, if you can try out Ravi, because if you're looking forward to many such lectures, so before it's the scheduled time, if 15 minutes before that, for 5-10 minutes, if you can just take a test, so
yeah, actually we can be already at the test day before, and we were so actually Aritra had also asked me to start 15 minutes before, and I think I had started 10 minutes before, and but he was pretty confident that everything is you know and it was working. They were able to see the video, they were able to hear also, but you never know our Indian internet connection, whether it is data or whether it is Wi-Fi, it will keep get you know it will disconnect in between, so, or the signal will become
Right.
weak with time, so, and then again it will come up. Like you know I have two data for network, Jio and Vodafone, and I have Wi-Fi connection also. So but you know somehow see we can make all these plans and we can try to from our end we try our best, but then you know when what will work that we never know. So in spite of having three connections, none of them were like working properly,
Right.
and I think Yeah, because you know these signals will be loaded now. Everyone is going online, so maybe they are also the service providers. They are also having tough time now, because in order to give that kind of connection, that fast connection and stable connection, I think it's a challenge for them also.
But Prabhuji, still. You know, there is so much of all this online entertainment that is happening. Like my nephew, he does online gaming. They do like 2-3 hour session.
Not able to hear Rajiv. Probably he's got disconnected, or maybe.
Hello, not able to hear Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
I can hear.
Haribol, not
okay.
Able to hear?
Swati Mataji, are you able to hear?
Yeah, I'm able to hear, Prabhuji.
Are you able to hear me, Swati Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji, I'm able to hear you.
Hare Krishna.
Acha, can you tell Premrat Das Prabhuji that you can
Swati
hear
Mataji?
Me?
Yeah, Prabhuji, we can hear Prabhuji. Rajiv Prabhuji.
Are you able to hear Swati Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji, I'm able to hear him. Can you hear him?
Even I can hear both of you. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that means maybe it's at Prabhuji's.
Yeah, I think he's connecting back.
Correct.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Haan Prabhuji, can you
hear me now? I also got disconnected. You know, I think you also got disconnected. So I think that every service provider, they have got this challenge. They are not able to properly manage the load. So, yeah, I mean, we have never faced this kind of problem in FCC. Okay, anyways, let's start. 71st, are you all able to hear?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so 71st verse.
71st.
Gopinatha kahe nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Guru ina are Keshava Bharati Mahadanya. Gopinatha kahe, Gopinatha Acharya replied, his name.
6-6 chapter, 71st.
Okay. Nam, his name, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Guru, Sanyas Guru, in her, his Keshav Bharti, of the name Keshav Bharti, Mahadhanya, the greatly fortunate personality. Gopinatha Acharya replied, the Lord's name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and his sannyas preceptor is the greatly fortunate Keshav Bharti. Sarvabhama kahe inara nama sarvatama Bharati sampradaya ino henaya madhyama. Sarvam kahe, Sarvam Bhattacharya replied, inara is nama, name, sarva uttama, first class, Bharati sampradaya, the community of the Bharati sannyasis, ino he. Aina becomes Madhyam, middle class. Sarvam Bhattacharya said, Sri Krishna is a very good name, but he belongs to the Bharati community. Therefore, he is a second class sannyasi. Gopinatha kahe inara nahi bhai apekshe ataiva bada sampradayara nahi ka apeksha. Gopinatha kahe, Gopinatha Acharya replied, inara of the Lord, nahi, there is not bhai apeksha. Peksha, dependence on any external formality. Ataiva, therefore, bada, big, sampradayera, of a community, nahika, that is not a peksha, necessity. Gopinath Acharya replied, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There is no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas from the Bharati Sampradaya, which belongs to the disciplic section of Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya introduced names for his sannyas disciples, and these are 10 in number. Out of these, the surnames Tirtha, Ashram, Saraswati are considered topmost. In the monastery at Sringeri, the surname Saraswati is considered first class, Bharati second class, and Puri third class. A sannyasi who has very nicely understood the slogan Tat Tvamasi and who takes his bath at the confluence of the rivers Ganges, Yamuna and Saraswati is called a Tirtha. A person who is very eager to accept sannyas, who is detached from worldly activities, who has no desire for any kind of material facilities and who is thus saved from repeated birth and death is known as ashrama. When a sannyasi lives in a beautiful solitary place in the forest and is freed from all material desires, he is called vana. A sannyasi who lives in the forest and renounces all connection with the world in order to be elevated to the heavenly planets where he can live in the Nandana Kanana is called Aranya. One who prefers living in the mountains, engaging in the study of the Bhagavad Gita, and whose intelligence is fixed is called Giri. One who prefers living in great mountains, even among ferocious animals, to attain the summit of philosophical speculation, understanding the essence of this material world is useless, is called Parvat. A sannyasi who has dipped into the ocean of absolute truth and collected some valuable stones of knowledge from that ocean, who never falls from the regular principles of a sannyasi, is called Sagara. One who has learned the classical art of music, who engages in its culture, and who has become expert and completely aloof from material attachment is called Saraswati. Saraswati is a goddess of music and learning, and in one hand she holds a musical instrument called a veena. A sannyasi who is always engaged in music for spiritual elevation is called Saraswati. One who has become completely educated and is freed from all kinds of ignorance and who is never unhappy even in a distressed condition is called Bharati. One who has become very expert in absolute knowledge, who is situated in the absolute truth and who always discusses the absolute truth is called Puri. All these sannyasis are assisted by brahmacharis who are described as follows. One who knows his real identity and is fixed in his particular occupational duty, who is always happy in spiritual understanding is called Swarup Brahmachari. One who completely knows the Brahman effulgence and is always engaged in the practice of yoga is called Prakash Brahmachari. One who has acquired absolute knowledge and who always meditates on the absolute truth, knowledge, the unlimited and Brahman effulgence, thus keeping himself in transcendental bliss, is called Ananda Brahmachari. One who is able to distinguish between matter and spirit, who is never disturbed by material transformations, and who meditates on the unlimited, inexhaustible, auspicious Brahman effulgence is a first class learned brahmachari and is called and his name is Chaitanya. When Sarvam Bhattacharya was talking with Gopinath Acharya about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sannyas community, he appreciated the name first name Sri Krishna but did not like the surname Chaitanya, which is the name for a brahmachari belonging to Bharati community. He therefore suggested that the Lord be elevated to the Sarvasati community. However, Gopinath Acharya pointed out that the Lord does not depend on any external formality. Gopinath Acharya was firmly convinced that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself and therefore independent of any external ritual or formality. If one wants to engage in pure devotional service, he does not require titular superiority as a Bharati or a Saraswati. Yeah, so these are all like technical terms of different status of sannyas, and I'm not like completely aware of these things, so I don't think I'll be able to explain anything on this.
But
I mean,
just one thing, Prabhuji.
It seems that whatever titles are,
just one thing here. इन्होंने इधर जो बताया है सन्यासी हु लिव्स इन फॉरेस्ट एंड रिनाउंसेस ऑल कनेक्शन विद वर्ल्ड इन ऑर्डर टू बी एलिवेटेड टू द हेवनली प्लैनेट्स वेयर ही कैन लिव इन द नंदन कनना इज कॉल्ड अरण्य सो आई मीन इज दिस नंदन कनना इज दिस सम प्लेस इन द हेवनली प्लैनेट इज दैट व्हाट इट मीन्स
इट सीम्स सो यू नो But I am not sure about it. Like I have not heard anything about this.
Nandan
so
Kanan,
I think
Nandan
it's a technicality.
Okay, but it refers to Krishna only, na? Nandan Kanan.
No,
it does not refer to Krishna.
I mean,
no idea.
It can be some other place also. Sorry, like no.
Okay. No problem.
So it can be some place in the heavenly planets. But anyways, definitely not. It is not in the spiritual world. It seems like that from this purport. So, and obviously, like you know, I'm not sure about this technicality because I think they are more into categorization of different types of sannyasis here, and so I'm not aware of these things. But actually, although Prabhupada has explained certain logical terms here. It sounds logical. Certain terms are logical. Like for example, Saraswati, we can understand. She is connected to music and all. And then Ashrama also, Tirtha also, Prabhupada, the way he has explained, we can understand why they are called like that. But certain I think terms, it seems like they are quite common for other category also. Like for example, everyone is supposed to be detached in Sannyas Ashram. That's a common thing. Everyone is supposed to be free from ignorance. Everyone is supposed to be satisfied and happy. So in that sense, there is some confusion about it. And, one who has become very expert in absolute knowledge, situated in absolute truth, and who always discusses absolute truth, is called Puri. And so, actually, when we read this, we feel that Puri must be the highest status of sannyas. But it's the lowest category of sannyas. So this is, these are things which probably require some more detailed information. Maybe someone who has knowledge about this area, then they can explain it.
Okay. Should I continue reading?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. भट्टाचार्य का है इन्हारा प्रौढ़ यौवन केमते संन्यास धर्म हई बेरक्षाना भट्टाचार्य का है सर्वम भट्टाचार्य रिप्लाइड इन्हारा हिज प्रौढ़ फुल यौवन यूथ केमते हाउ संन्यास धर्म प्रिंसिपल्स ऑफ सन्यासी हाई वे देयर विल बी रक्षण प्रोटेक्शन द भट्टाचार्य इंक्वायर्ड श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु इज इन हिज फुल फ्लेज्ड यूथफुल लाइफ How can he keep the principles of sannyas? Nirantara inha ke vedanta sunaiba vairagya advaita marge pravesha karaiba Nirantara continually inha ke to him vedanta philosophy sunaiba I shall recite vairagya of renunciation advaita of monism marge on the path pravesha entrance karaiba I shall cause him to make translation. I shall continually recite Vedanta philosophy before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that he may remain fixed in his renunciation and thus enter upon the path of monism. According to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, among sannyasis, the cultivation of Vedanta philosophy helps in becoming detached from sense gratification. Thus, A sannyasi can protect the prestige of wearing a loincloth, kaupina. One has to practice sense control as well as mind control and subdue the six forces of speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly and genitals.
then one can become expert in understanding the devotional service of the Lord and thus become a perfect sannyasi. For that purpose, one must cultivate knowledge and renunciation regularly. When one is attached to material sense gratification, he cannot protect his sannyas order. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya suggested that by the study of Vairagya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might be saved from the clutches of full-fledged youthful desires. Next. Sahena yadi punarapi yoga patadiya.
Yeah.
Hanji. Should I continue?
Yeah, so generally this Mayavadi sannyasi, they focus more on Vedanta philosophy. That is their main goal. And according to Mayavad philosophy or according to the followers of Shankaracharya, actually they don't believe that the Yuga Dharma in Kali Yuga is Harinam Sankirtan. They still perform yajnas. And they also do not accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna. So they do not even consider the, you know, ISKCON as a bona fide sampradaya probably, because they reject Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They also criticize the sentiments that the devotees will, because for us it is recommended that we cultivate loving sentiments for the Lord, but because they think that everyone is going to, everyone has to realize that they are one with the Brahman, and so there is no question of cultivating those sentimental emotions or loving emotions. That is the reason they criticize. And during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time also, he was criticized by the Mayavadi sannyasis. So he was also criticized by Prakashananda Saraswati. Later on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated him. So these Mayavadi sannyasis, they are, basically after philosophical speculation, they are gyanis, and they cannot digest, because when they see a sannyasi is dancing, chanting the holy name, crying, and so they feel that it's very awkward, because we are supposed to get disconnected from the material world completely. We should detach ourselves from the material world completely, but they do not understand that these are transcendental emotions, because obviously they feel that everyone is Brahman. They are just yet to realize that. For whom are we expressing all these emotions? And that is the reason they are against it. Swati Mataji, you can continue.
Yes, true. Text 76. Kahina yadi punarapi yoga padadiya samskara kareya uttama sampradaya aniya. Kahina says yadi is punarapi again yoga padadiya of offering him saffron cloth. Samskara, reformatory process. Kariye, I perform uttama, first class. Sampradaya, to the community. Aniya, bringing. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then suggested, if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like, I would bring him into a first class sampradaya by offering him saffron cloth and performing the reformatory process again. Purport. The Bhattacharya wanted to reinstate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into the Saraswati Sampradaya because he did not like the Lord's belonging to the Bharati Sampradaya or Puri Sampradaya. Actually, he did not know the position of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not depend on any inferior or superior Sampradaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead remains in the supreme position in all circumstances.
Yeah. Okay.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, Nirvika, you would like to. But Nirvika, why are you so late?
my sister had called up. Something urgent had come. So I had to speak with her.
Yeah, okay. But
hello?
At least try to join by 9:30.
Yeah, yeah. She called me up at 9:15. Something very urgent had come up. So I had to speak with her.
Oh, okay. So, can you read verse number 77?
Yeah. 77. Okay, 77. Shri Gopinath Chandra Kunda, Dehe Dukhihaila, Gopinath Acharya Kichu Kahitela Gila. Hearing Gopinath Mukund, Gopinath Acharya Mukundat, Dunhi, both, Dukhi, unhappy, Haila became Gopinath Acharya, Gopinath Acharya. To choose something, Sahite to speak, Lagila began. Gopinath Acharya Mukundatta became very unhappy when they heard this. Gopinath Acharya therefore addressed Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya as follows. 78. Bhattacharya Tumi Ihara Najana Mahima. Bhagavata Lakshanera Iha Te Sima. Bhattacharya, my dear Bhattacharya, tell me you, Ihara of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahima, the greatness, Bhagavata of being Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lakshanera of symptoms, Ihate in him, Sima, the highest degree. My dear Bhattacharya, you do not know the greatness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are found in him to the highest degree. Since Bhattacharya was an impersonalist, he had no idea of the absolute truth beyond the impersonal effulgence. However, Gopinath Acharya informed him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who know the absolute truth know it in three phases as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11. Vedanti Sat Satya Vidya Satram Yad Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavanti Sarjati. Those who are in knowledge of the non-dual absolute truth know very clearly what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sat Aishwarya Purna, complete with six opulences. Gopinath Acharya emphasized that all those six opulences were completely existing in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Okay. yeah, okay, I will continue.
Okay.
Tahate vikyata ino parama ishvara Agnastane kichunaye vignare gochara. Tahate, therefore, vikyat, celebrated, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Parameshwara, the Supreme Personality of God, Agnastane, before an ignorant person, kichu, any nahe, not vignera of person who knows gochara information. Gopinath Acharya continued, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is celebrated as the same Supreme Personality of God. Those who are ignorant in this connection find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. Shishya Gana Kahe Ishwara Kaha Kon Pramane Acharya Kahe Vigna Mata Ishwara Lakshane. Shishya Gana Kahe, the disciple of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya said, Ishwara Kahe, you say the personality of Godhead, Kon Pramane, by what evidence? Acharya Kahe, Gopinath replied, Vigna Mata, statement of authorized person, Ishwara Lakshane, in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Disciples of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya retaliated, by what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? Gopinath Acharya replied, the statements of authorized Acharyas who understand the personality of Godhead are proof. Since the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there have been pseudo incarnations in India who do not present authorized evidence. 500 years ago, the disciple Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, being very learned scholars, was certainly right in asking Gopinath Acharya for evidence. If a person proposes that he himself is God, or that someone else is an incarnation of God or God himself, he must cite evidence from Shastra to prove his claim. Thus, the request of Bhattacharya's disciple is quite bona fide. Unfortunately, at the present moment, it has become fashionable to present someone as an incarnation of God without referring to Shastras. Before an intelligent person accepts someone as incarnation of God, however, he must ask about the evidence. when the disciples of Sarvam Bhattacharya challenged Gopinath Acharya, he immediately replied correctly, "We must hear the statements of great personalities in order to understand Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna is established as Supreme Personality of Godhead by statements from many authorized persons such as Brahma, Narad, Vyasdev, Asit and Arjuna. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also exhibited as Supreme Personality of Godhead by evidence from the same personalities. This will be explained later." Okay, next. Rajiv Prabhu, you can.
Yes, Prabhuji. Shishyata hai Ishwar tattva sadhi anumane, Acharya ka hai anumane na hai Ishwar gyane. Shishuka hai, the disciple said, Ishwar tattva, the truth of the absolute, sadhi, derived, anumane by hypothesis, Acharya ka hai, Gopinath Acharya replied, anumane by hypothesis, na hai, there is not, Ishwar gyane, real knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. The disciples of the Bhattacharya said, we derive knowledge of the absolute truth by logical hypothesis. Gopinath Acharya replied, one cannot attain real knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such logical hypothesis and argument. The Mayavadi philosophers in particular make certain hypotheses about the absolute truth. They reason that in the material world we experience that everything is created. If we trace the history of anything, we find a creator. Therefore, there must be a creator of this huge cosmic manifestation. By such reasoning, they come to the conclusion that a higher power has created this cosmic manifestation. The Mayavadis do not accept this great power to be a person. Their brains cannot accommodate the fact that the huge cosmic manifestation can be created by a person. They doubt this because as soon as they think of a person, they think of a person with the material world with limited potency. Sometimes the Mayavadi philosophers will accept Lord Krishna or Lord Rama as Bhagwan, but they think of the Lord as a person having a material body. The Mayavadis do not understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a spiritual body. They think of Krishna as a great personality, a human being within whom there is the supreme impersonal power Brahman. Therefore, they finally conclude that the impersonal Brahman is the supreme, not the personality Krishna. This is the basis of Mayavadi philosophy. However, from the Shastras, we can understand that the Brahman effulgence consists of the bodily rays of Krishna. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti shvasesha vasudadi vibhuti bhin naam tad brahma nishkala mananta shesha bhutam govinda madhi purusham tam ham bhajami. I serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, the primeval Lord, the effulgence of whose transcendental body is known as the Brahma Jyoti. That Brahma Jyoti, which is unlimited, unfathomed and all pervasive, is the cause of the creation of unlimited powers of planets with varieties of climates and specific conditions of life, given in Brahma Samhita 5.40. Mayavadi philosophers study the Vedic literature, but they do not understand that in the last stage of realization, the absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. They do accept the fact that there is a creator of this cosmic manifestation, but that is anumana, hypothesis. The Mayavadi philosopher's logic is something like seeing smoke on a hill and concluding that there is a fire. When there is a forest fire on a high hill, smoke is the first of all visible. Since it is known that smoke is created when there is fire, from seeing the smoke on the hill, one can conclude that a fire is burning there. Similarly, from seeing this cosmic manifestation, the Mayavadi philosophers conclude that there must be a creator. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted evidence to show that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually the creator of the cosmic manifestation. Only then would they accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of creation. Gopinath Acharya replied that one could not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by guesswork. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakash Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavratah Shudoyam Nabi Janati Loko Mamajam Avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent, for I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. The Supreme Personality of Godhead deserves the right of not being exposed to non-devotees. He can only be understood by bona fide devotees. Lord Krishna says elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita 18.55, Bhaktya mam abhijanati, one can understand me only by the devotional process. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita 4.3, Lord Krishna says, Bhaktosi me sakhacheti rahasyam hetad uttamam. Here Lord Krishna informs Arjuna that he is disclosing the secrets of the Bhagavad Gita to him because he is his devotee. Arjuna was not a sannyasi, nor was he a Vedantist or a Brahmana. He was, however, a devotee of Krishna. The conclusion is that we have to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija in CC Madhya 19.151. More evidence can be cited to show that without the mercy of a devotee or the mercy of Krishna, one cannot understand what is Krishna and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the next verse.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's very strange that Mayavadis, they are able to accept that there is a creator, but the problem is that they think this creator is basically Brahman. Everything, Brahman is the cause of everything. Everything is coming from Brahman. But the only thing that they are not saying, actually they have attributed all personal qualities to Brahman. But the last thing that they don't want to admit is that Brahman is a personality. Although they have attributed everything personal to the Brahman. Because they say that if Brahman is a creator, Brahman is the origin, Brahman is the cause of everything. And we are all Brahman. We are just yet to realize that we are Brahman. So the entire process of spiritual life or spiritual cultivation is to make us realize that we are Brahman, because we have forgotten currently, or you know, because of mistaken identity, we are covered currently in ignorance. So once we attain knowledge or vidya, then this ignorance is destroyed, and then immediately we realize we are Brahman. Yeah, but you know, this type of philosophy, it has many loopholes, and so many questions are unanswered. In our philosophy, actually I will tell you one thing very interesting, that whichever philosophy you would take, whether it is Buddhism, Mayavad, now see, interestingly, in Buddhism they believe in karma, they believe in reincarnation also, but they do not believe in soul. That's something which is ridiculous, or does not, you know, it does not go along with that. And that is the reason they are not able to understand properly. They are not able to answer many questions because they reject God. They say that God is not present, God is not there, everything is void. Finally, you attain the state of voidism. So Buddhism also, they cannot answer many questions. Mayavad philosophy also, they cannot answer many questions. In our Vaishnava philosophy, there is only one question that is unanswered. Which is that question?
How did God come into existence?
It is.
How did we fall?
How did we fall? Yeah. So, see, how did God come into existence? That is not a big thing, because when Mayavadis are accepting Buddhism, they accept Brahman to be the cause of everything. That means they are accepting some entity is responsible for the origin. Okay. But Buddhism, they are denying God, and so they are not able to answer the main foundation of their beliefs.
which is that how the karma originated and how where are we coming from. So these questions are not answered by them. And Jainism also, it is quite close parallel to Buddhism. The difference is that in Jainism, they accept the Tirthankars. I think they have 24 Tirthankars probably in their, just like we have one Kalpa, I think they also have this system of Kalpa or time period where in one Kalpa, 24 Tirthankars appear, something like that. 24 or I'm not sure about the number, but so, like, so.
Yes, 24.
Rishabh, 24, okay. Yeah. So Rishabhdev is the first Tirthankar, and I think the last Tirthankar is, who is the last Tirthankar? Or is Rishabhdev the last one?
Rishabhdev is the first one and last, or, 24th is Vardhaman Mahavir.
Mahavir, okay, yeah, yeah, that's right. So I think then, I think it starts with Rishabhdev, right? So Rishabhdev is the first Tirthankar.
Yeah, Rishabhdev is the first. Adinath.
Yeah, first. And yeah, I okay, so now I recollect that they say that Krishna is going to appear as Tirthankar in the upcoming cycle, something like that they say. But in any case, see, now they if you ask them that what is the origin of, because they also believe strongly in karma. And if you ask them that from where this karma is coming, so they say that karma is anadi, just like we also say karma is anadi. They also say it is anadi, but they do not have any reference for it. So if you ask them that where from this karma is coming and where from the jivas are coming, they will say they are both anadi and they are always existing. So there is no question of. So then when we tell them that, well, you are unable to answer this, but we can answer your question, we say that they are coming from the Supreme Lord, then they will counter argue us and they will say that, well, your Supreme Lord, where is he coming from? And then we tell them that he is anadi, he is sanatan, so he is ever existing. And we are also sanatan, we are also anadi, but at least there is a source. And so we give example of the sun rays and the sun, that the sun is sustaining the sun rays. And so that sun is actually our Supreme God. But then they question it, that how did your God come into existence, as Rajiv Prabhu is saying. So, but our definition of God is that he is omnipotent, he is omniscient, and he does not have any origin by definition, because if he had an origin, that means that he cannot be God. So it's a definition of God, because God means the first person also, technically speaking. You know, from whom everything has emanated, as from whom everything has been created. So what basically they are doing, they are mixing atheism and the philosophy of karma, because ultimately they say that Jainism is also similar to Buddhism and Mayavadism, because Advaitism, because they all claim the same thing, that Buddhism does not claim that we are Brahman. They just simply say that everything is void. Finally, everything is going to go into voidism. So, Shunyavad. So, one is Shunyavad, one is Advaitavad. And Jainism is, you can also say, disguised Mayavad, something like that. Where they claim that you can also attain the position of a Tirthankar, or you will become God. And for them, the definition of God is that one who can understand past, present, future, and one who attains knowledge. That's it. That is the definition for the Jains about God. So this is how they have defined God, that after attaining enlightenment, that person or you know, so they say that one becomes God means that God, he only has knowledge of past, present, future. That's it, nothing else. And so if you ask them that, okay, does the God control, is he able to control? And they say that no one can control anyone. Okay, no one can control because everyone is capable of becoming God. Now here, this is the greatest loophole that they are creating, because if they are saying that no one can control us, that means why are they following certain things? Why are they following their dharma? And why are they practicing this path of getting free from this material world? Because, see, so it is obvious that if they do not follow the path of dharma, or if they do not follow the path of attaining enlightenment, then they will have to suffer. And so what does that mean? That they are controlled by someone. It's obvious. So according to them, the Tirthankars, they are there for giving enlightenment to all the living entities. And by following their instructions, they can attain the same path. Now, this is the biggest loophole, the biggest question mark is, you are saying that the jiva cannot be controlled by anyone, but you know, when you are saying that when you follow the Tirthankar, then only you attain an auspicious destination, then it means that someone is controlling you. Because if you are not doing that, you are punished, you are suffering. So they are not able to answer this question. And obviously, along with that, what is the beginning cycle of karma? They are not able to explain. From where we all have originated, that they are not able to explain. Even if they say that we are anadi, we are beginningless, we are existing, but then what is the starting point of karma? That they are not able to explain. And so according to our philosophy, in Vaishnava philosophy, so we say that we somehow, because of not accepting God, we came to this material world. Because we wanted to be the controllers and masters. We wanted to imitate the position of God. So we came here. Okay, now from where we came, that's another topic of discussion. But the fact that we have come here means that we wanted to enjoy separately from God. And the moment we started taking decisions, that's how we started getting entangled in the cycle of karma. So now, obviously, the starting point for any jiva is very difficult to trace, because this karmic cycle itself is anadi. It is beginningless. It is eternal. So if you say that, well, for example, Prabhupada says that the very first position the living entity took was that of Brahma in the material world. Yeah, so we understand that's the first position, but technically there is no first position, because the cycle itself is eternal. Now, you may say that, okay, I became Brahma, but then before that also it is possible you were existing. And even if you take the role of Brahma in the beginning itself, ideally let's assume that, okay, you just fell down and immediately you became Brahma in one of the universe. But then, depending on your actions, depending on your choices, either you go back to Godhead or you will fall down. If you are attached to the material world, if you are a mixed devotee, then you will also take another birth. You cannot go back to Godhead. So then this is a starting point of karma. Now, how did I create the karma? How did I make the choice? That is, we can say that because we are all God to a very small degree, to a very insignificant degree, we are all God. But we have this small desire to behave like God. All of us have this desire. So when we came down to this material world, why did we choose certain things? So like, for example, there are 1,000 jivas who came to the material world in the beginning, and they have chosen different paths. They have chosen different ways of living life. And so some of them, they must have chosen the path back to Godhead. Some of them must have chosen to be in the mode of goodness, some in the mode of passion, some in the mode of ignorance. and depending on that, then the karma cycle started. So they must have fallen down in their respective positions. So we, at least we can give some logic behind the starting point of karma. And again, the main point is karma cycle begins because of avidya. Because we don't have knowledge or we don't have realization that we are supposed to serve God. That realization is not there. Although maybe the constitutional position of the jiva is a servant of the Lord, but to how much degree the jiva has realized that? That, you know, we cannot say. That is something which is difficult to answer. And you know, why certain jivas they fell to the material world? That's also another question. So when jiva are coming to the material world, it creates a cycle of karma because of ignorance, avidya. And that is the reason when we provide vidya to them, then at the very first life, which is that of Brahma, or maybe one or two lifetimes, if we gain knowledge and if we follow that, then very quickly we can go back to Godhead. We don't have to get entangled in the cycle of karma. But what happens is many jivas they somehow get attached to the material world, material things, and because of that they become lusty. So see, attachment is the root cause, and that attachment, like, you know, Krishna explains this stages in the Bhagavad Gita, that when you get attracted to something, you get attached to that thing, and when you get attached to that thing, you want that thing, you desire that thing. If you don't get that thing, you become, through that attachment, you get lusty. Okay, and when lust is not fulfilled, you become angry. And anger puts us into delusion. And that is the starting point of falling down. So, everything starts with contemplation in the mind. So, as soon as the jiva starts contemplating that I am getting attracted, and because of the attraction, the jiva gets attached to it. So then that attachment creates lust, and that lust to subsequent anger, and then anger to fall down. Illusion, and then illusion to fall down, like that. So it's a stage which is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, and this is how the process works. Now, why does a particular jiva think like that and make choices like that? That is a question which cannot be asked, because we say that the jivas are all God, and so God means that they have all are unique, they are all individuals, and they are all independent. To some degree, they are independent. So just like Krishna cannot be questioned why he chooses a particular color, why he chooses a particular why he dresses in a particular way, why does he wear only peacock feather, why he has a blackish blue complexion. These questions are useless, because that's the choice of God, and so there is no argument over that. Okay, there is no, we cannot question that. So similarly, if we question that why a particular jiva chose a particular action, that itself is actually difficult, because they are all God. So by their own nature, by their own independence, they are choosing certain things. And because they are God, but they are limited, you know, they are extremely limited, that is the reason they will fall down. And they get, so even Krishna gets attracted, even Krishna gets lusty, but the difference is that Krishna can easily overcome that lust. Because his opulence, you know, he is full in all the opulences in unlimited quantity. So he can, he is always under his own control. But we try to control things and we get controlled by things. Okay, that is how we get entrapped in this material world. So to this extent we can answer. But then now the question is that where are we falling from? This is a question which actually cannot be answered. Till date it has not been answered. Prabhupada was even not able to answer it. I mean, you know, he did answer it in a way which was not like, because, you know, Prabhupada also said both things. He said one cannot fall from spiritual world, and one has, like, we have also come from the spiritual world. Prabhupada said both things. And then when he was repeatedly asked this question, then, you know, he said that when you go back, you will actually understand and your question will be answered. But till the timing you are here, just go to the spiritual world. You know, you just, you are drowning in the material world. And so if someone is throwing a rope, you just catch and somehow get out of this ocean of material existence. And once you go to spiritual world, then your questions will be answered. So Prabhupada also actually could not, or maybe he answered the question, but probably our material senses could not grasp it. We cannot understand it. We are not able to. And I think it's also very important that we have to realize one thing, that Krishna is unlimited. And so it is not possible for us to understand everything. That we have to accept. That is called humility also. It is not possible for us to understand everything through our intelligence. Okay, so this is now the same thing, same concept is presented by the Mayavadis also. Because when they say that, you know, you just have to realize that you are Brahman when you attain knowledge. So for us it may seem that, you know, it does not make sense. And so they will say that, well, you know, it cannot make sense to you because you are still in the material world and you have material senses. So once your senses are purified, then you can actually realize that. How it will happen, they cannot explain it to anyone, because you know, this is something which is beyond logic. So even Shankaracharya also, I think he tried to give a number of explanations, but his explanations were very jumbled up. You know, he could not provide a consistent answer, and it was full of contradiction also. So our acharyas, they have refuted his conclusion very thoroughly. So even his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra and the commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata and Upanishads. So they are all, he has just jumbled up everything so that, you know, we cannot understand it properly. He has used a lot of logic to support his claims, but he has basically used word jugglery in order to mislead us. Okay, so this is actually the philosophies, and I think, you know, so, you know, why we are convinced about Vaishnava philosophy, or why it is the best philosophy, is because, very simple, that we can clearly understand that they are ascribing logic, they are ascribing personal attributes to Brahman by saying that Brahman is doing this, Brahman is doing that. That is very clear. So when Brahman can do this, do that, that means that, you know, why can't you call that Brahman as a person? What is the problem? And who has said that, you know, that Brahman is not a person? Who said that? Just because your acharya is saying does not mean that we have to accept it. So now Shankaracharya has quoted Shastras. He has quoted Upanishads to prove this point. But Upanishads also, there are so many statements where this personal aspect of God is also revealed very clearly. In fact, I also said one time, the very fact that there is mention of spiritual world in Upanishads, in the Rig Veda, what does that mean? It clearly defeats all these Mayavadi conceptions. The fact that there is mention of Vaikuntha, the fact that there is mention of Goloka, what does it mean? It's very clear that, you know, if Brahman is the ultimate truth, then how can there be spiritual world? Why the Shastra is talking about spiritual world also? So, and another thing is, see, they are rejecting completely Vaishnava philosophy, but we are accepting their philosophy also. And we are saying this is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which means simultaneously one and different. So we accept that Brahman is there. In fact, just now we have read this verse, Prabhupada quotes, Vedanta with Veda with, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Sabyate. That verse Prabhupada just quoted. And it is clearly mentioned that Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Sabyate, that the Absolute Truth is existing in these three forms. Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yag Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Sabyate. Right? So, we are accepting, we are reconciling. We are saying that you are also right, but we are also right. And that is the position of Shastra also. It is all inclusive. Another thing is that when we can have a personality, why does the Absolute Truth, why can't the Absolute Truth have a personality who is much more powerful than us? So, when we talk about the Absolute Truth, it must include everything. It cannot, so if it is lacking something, that means it is inferior to us in certain things, which is not possible. The source who has created us, it cannot be inferior to us in any form. Right? So when you consider all these philosophies, so we have reconciled all these philosophies, and we also accept the philosophy of the other three Vaishnava Acharyas, and we have also accepted the philosophy of Shankaracharya, and that is how everything is reconciled. So that is the reason Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, it is all inclusive, and it is perfectly satisfying the Shastric conclusion. Now other philosophies, because they are lacking in something, they are not so, like for example our four Vaishnava philosophies, for example, you know, Madhvacharya's Dvaitavad, and then Vallabhacharya's Shuddha Advaitavad. So these philosophies, they lack something. They are not able to completely include all the Shastric points. Okay, to some degree, they do not reconcile. But Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, because it is all inclusive, it reconciles everything. So the message of Shastra is completely covered in Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, because it has accepted all these philosophical principles. Okay, it is just a matter of understanding. Yeah, are you all able to hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because I have been speaking,
yeah, I can hear you
almost
I
like
can hear
for
you.
Half an hour. Okay, that's good. So I hope you have got the point. You know, we have discussed this earlier also a couple of times, but because the context came, so I think we have revised again. This is how Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy is all inclusive. So any comments on this?
Yeah, Prabhuji. I mean, I think in that sense, the Vaishnava philosophy, it encompasses all the philosophies of the various religions, you can say. So our Sanatana Dharma, therefore, is actually not putting any restrictions on God. And we are nobody to put restrictions. Like you said, how can we say that God
Correct, exactly.
is because yeah. then God will become lesser than us. No? So that is obviously not possible. So certainly in that aspect, it is the most wholesome philosophy It includes probably every possible thought that can come. And what we cannot think also is actually, it says that what we cannot conceive also is God. So there are so many things we may not have been touched upon, which actually God includes, which is included in God. So sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in fact, right. So, you know, in fact, one more very striking point is why this is the most illogical philosophy, this Brahman philosophy, is because it's very simple. Brahman is, you say that he's not a person, he does not have any attributes. So then how he is creating all these jivas with so many attributes, what is Brahman going to gain from that? And what is the purpose of Brahman creating all these things? Because Brahman is a very neutral position. It's like a, you know, it does not have any consciousness. So how can a non-conscious entity, and why will a non-conscious entity, the fact that it is deciding to create something, that means, you know, he is making a decision, he is making a choice. And I think that is also explained very nicely by Baldev Vidyabhushan in his Vedanta Sutra commentary, that the fact that he decided to create, that itself indicates that Brahman has thought about something, you know, there is some purpose. Otherwise, you know, it's Brahman is like, you know, let's say an air. Air cannot, I mean, there is no capacity for air to think. It's a non-conscious entity, simple as that. So how come all these conscious entities are coming, and what that purpose, you know, is, how is Brahman going to fulfill that purpose? What is the purpose of Brahman? So these questions are extremely logical, you know, they are unable to answer this. So it's a very ridiculous thing that, you know, they say that Brahman is a non-living entity, or a personal entity. So how can someone accept this? You know, maybe some foolish person can. And Prabhupada writes also here that maybe, you know, they don't want to accept a person because they compare the material person to be God. So immediately they are just thinking and they are relating to a material person when they think of God, because they feel that how can God be a material person like us? So they perceive God something beyond human entity, but they don't know that God can be everything. At the same time, he can also be transcendental to everything. So this is something, you know, I don't know why they don't understand. It's like very simple logic. Okay. So let's continue. So who read this?
Should I continue, Prabhuji?
We can go in the order only, but so I wanted to know.
I thought you've already spoken for so long. Nee, the last verse I read, but after that you've spoken so long, so maybe somebody else can read now.
Yes.
Okay, Swati Madari, then it's you can start.
Yeah. Text 82. Anumana Pramana Nahi Ishvara Tattva Jnane Kripa Vina Ishvarere Keha Nahi Jane Anupama Pramana, evident by hypothesis. Nahi, there is not. Ishvara Tattva Jnane, in understanding.
Okay, I just recollected one important point. I think we had discussed this earlier, but basically the way they perceive God, the Mayavadis, is that if you remember, I had given this example of pots, how Mayavadis say that the air inside the pot is this, you know, is actually the same as the air outside the pot. And that way, you know, once the pot will break or the earth element will break, then the air inside and outside will be, you know, it will merge and it will become one. So this is their philosophy, that they compare us to like pots, and only difference is that when these personalities like Krishna, Rama, all these Vishnu forms or Shiva forms, when they are there, so they think that they perceive them to be as huge pots. So we are like, you know, small pots, and they are like huge pots, and that, so they say that they have mystic opulences, they have all these mystic potencies and all, but they are, so they consider them as someone who is very close to attain that liberation. So these personalities, they are not liberated, they are not born yet, but they are very close to attaining that vision. So that's the reason they call them as big pots. We are like small pots. So they have more opulences, you know, and power. And that is the reason they are able to, when they come, they are able to control many, and they are able to influence many living entities. But ultimately, when they finish up their karma, they will also merge, and they will become one with Brahman. We are very good at that status. Like, for example, you know, in bhakti terms, we say that a devotee, when he attains bhava or prema, he goes back to Godhead. So similarly, these avatars, they perceive them as very close to attaining liberation. So like that. Okay, so is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Mataji, you can continue.
Yes, sir. Anupama Pramana, evidence by hypothesis. Nahi, there is not. Ishvara Tattva Jnane, in understanding the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kripa Vina, without his mercy. Ishvarera, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Keha, anyone. Nahi, not. Jane, knows. Gopinath Acharya continued, one can understand the Supreme Personality of God only by his mercy, not by guesswork or hypothesis. But one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of God simply by exhibiting some mundane magic. Foolish people are enchanted by magical demonstrations, and when they see a few wonderful things done by mystical power, they accept them.
Yeah.
They accept a magician as the Supreme Personality of Godhead or an incarnation. This is not the way of realization. Nor should one guess or speculate about an incarnation of God or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to learn from the bona fide person or from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, as Arjuna did, by the mercy of Krishna. Krishna himself also gives many hints about his potency as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead only through the evidence presented by the Shastras and the Mahajanas. In any case, one must have the mercy of the Lord in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotional service.
Yeah, so we are at least fortunate that we have been given the intelligence, or we have been blessed and we have got the mercy of the devotees and the Lord, that we don't have this confusion that, like other Mayavadis or Buddhists or other Jain people, at least we are able to accept that the personality aspect of God is prominent. So we are actually very fortunate, right? And that is only possible because we have probably attained the mercy of some devotee. So actually in the Upanishad, it's very interesting that it is mentioned that no one can become a devotee of the Lord by their own will. It's only the Lord who chooses, you know. So you can only become a devotee when the Lord chooses you to become a devotee. The Lord chooses himself, you know. So now from this statement, you will probably think that we are chosen ones by God. Okay, but so there is some truth in this, but at the same time, it's not necessary that, because that chosen, you know, mercy from directly from the Lord is very rare. So generally what happens is, you know, that all, so the Supreme Lord himself chooses means that he will choose anyone whom the devotee will bestow mercy. So we have also explained, we have, I think, we have had this discussion earlier about how a Madhyam Adhikari is actually responsible for giving mercy to others, and he is the one who is creating devotees, making devotees, and obviously the mercy of the Lord follows the mercy of the devotee. So that's how we can say that the law, because, and then finally we say that, you know, because bhakti is coming from bhakti, and because bhakti is the shakti of the Lord, so that is the reason in one sense the Lord himself chooses, because the bhakti in the heart of the devotee is the shakti of the Lord. And when Madhyam Adhikari is giving kripa, so they are giving kripa from their bhakti. So bhakti comes from bhakti. So bhakti has no other source. Obviously, we know that bhakti has come from Swati Matari. But in the spiritual context, bhakti comes from bhakti. Okay, so bhakti has come from Swati Matari, but because Swati Matari is full of bhakti, that's why finally we can say that bhakti comes from bhakti. So this is what we have discussed earlier. Yeah, so this is what we discussed earlier, that the cause, root cause of bhakti is bhakti, but it is manifested through a Madhyam Adhikari. Okay, and that is how the Lord chooses himself. Mm. We can say like that. Okay, so is this okay. Clear?
Yes, yes, Ravi. No problem.
Okay. Yeah. Next, yeah, Nirvika. So almost each and every verse has a purport.
Yeah, yeah. Understanding. Ishvarera kripa lesha haye ta yahare seite ishvare tatva jani pare pare ishvarera of the personality, ishvarera of the personality of Godhead. Kripa lesha, a little mercy, haye, there is, ta certainly, yahare upon whom, seita, he certainly, ishvare tatva, the absolute truth. Jani bare to know, pare is able. The Acharya continued, if one receives but a tiny bit of the Lord's favor by dint of devotional service, he can understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 84. Athafi deva padam dhijadvaya prasada lesham grihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahino nachanya eko pisiran visindam. Atha, therefore, api, indeed. Say, your Deva, my Lord, Pada Ambujidvaya, of the true lotus feet, Prasad of the mercy, Yesha, by only a trait, Anugrihitaha, favored, Eva, certainly, he indeed, Jhanati, one knows, Tatvam, the truth, Bhagavat of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahimya, of the greatness, Na, never, Cha, and, Anya, another, Esa, one, Api, although, Hiram, for a long period, Vishindan, speculating. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even if they continue to study the Vedas for many years. The above verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.29. The Brahma Samhita states, Vedeshi Dirlabham Adirlabham Atma Bhakta, 5.33 of Brahma Samhita. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate goal of knowledge, Vedas is surveyed aham evavedya as the Bhagavad Gita 15.15, one who is not a pure devotee and who is not engaged in the service of the Lord cannot understand him. Lord Brahma therefore confirms this. Vedas should be Adirlabham. It is very difficult to understand the Supreme Lord simply through one's studies. Adirlabham Atma Bhakta. However, it is very easy for the devotees to capture the Lord. The Lord is known as Adhita, unconquerable. No one can conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the Lord consents to be conquered by His devotees. That is His mission. As stated in the Padma Puran, Atah Shri Krishna Namadina Bhavit Graham Indriya Sevan Mukhlehi Jiva Dasyan Eva Shkariti Adha Akira Sandhu Sindhu 1.2.234. Being pleased by devotional activities, the Lord reveals Himself to His devotees. That is the way to understand Him. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam quoted by Gopinath Acharya was originally spoken by Lord Brahma when he was defeated by Lord Krishna. Lord Brahma had stolen all the calves and cowherd boys in order to test Krishna's power. Lord Brahma admitted that his own extraordinary powers within the universe were not in the least comparable to the unlimited powers of Lord Krishna. If Lord Brahma can make a mistake in understanding Krishna, what to speak of ordinary persons who can either misunderstand Krishna or falsely present a so-called incarnation of Krishna for their own sense gratification?
Okay. So, it's only devotional service by which we can understand the Lord. The depth of Krishna consciousness can be understood, or the depth in the tattva of the Lord can only be understood by devotional service. It is by no other way. So see, we know that generally it is mentioned that jnana karma dina vritam, that philosophical speculation and fruitive activities, these are not favorable for Krishna consciousness, and these are they are not within the purview of Uttama Bhakti. So they are actually tinged with some ulterior motive. They are sense gratification, and that is the reason they cannot be accepted as Uttama Bhakti. But okay, now the question is that why in spiritual life we are attaining knowledge? Can we say that bhakti depends on knowledge, or can we advance in bhakti because of knowledge, or is bhakti dependent on knowledge? What is the answer?
Knowledge can facilitate advancement of bhakti. That is why we are encouraged to read Srila Prabhupada's books, so that knowledge will come and will bring some realization. In that sense, maybe, but purely on knowledge, it is not possible, because devotional service is definitely required.
Devotional service will? Certainly?
It's certainly required.
Okay, that is required. Okay, so you are saying that bhakti is not dependent on knowledge.
I'm saying not dependent on knowledge, but knowledge does help to further our potency in bhakti, because that's why you say now that we should read Srila Prabhupada's books. That's why all the seniors tell us to read the books, because that will give us the knowledge and understanding and help us increase our purity and our understanding of devotional service, so that we can perform devotional service even better with the right attitude. So that sort of knowledge does facilitate, but ultimately it is devotional service which will help in increase bhakti.
Yeah, okay. Any further comments on this? Okay. Anything on this? Anything more? Okay. Now the question is: if devotees, they are unable to digest the knowledge, or their intellectual capacity is very less, then can they achieve perfection? or you know, let's say if devotee is blind and so he is unable to read, or maybe some devotees are deaf, they are able to see but they are deaf, so or maybe they are deaf and blind. So can those kind of devotees attain perfection?
They can.
Okay, how?
By the mercy of the spiritual master.
Okay.
And yeah. obviously, they, and what about as long the... as long as they have lolium, greed, to receive it.
Okay, and okay, so as long as they have that enthusiasm and greed. And what about the knowledge aspect?
Knowledge helps to improve the purity, but if they have the lolium and they have the purity, innate purity is already there.
If they are not, so let's say for example, see, there may be devotees who might be serving, there may be devotees who might be chanting, but they are not aware of Krishna's truth. They are not aware of Krishna's tattva, then will they be able to advance by their service or by chanting?
They can, as long as they are associated to the spiritual master.
Yeah, but so what is the meaning of association? In association, what are we doing basically?
Surrenderance. As long as they are surrendered.
Okay, yeah, so surrender basically means, surrender basically means what? Acceptance of the Siddhant principles of a Sampradaya. If you remember, we had a discussion in our Prabhupada Leela class where Aditra asked a question about initiation, you know, that. So who is initiated? That was the question. And then I explained that anyone who actually can accept the parampara's teachings and makes a connection with the guru, then he is as good as he is initiated. And Prabhupada also writes this very clearly. As soon as you accept the teachings of the guru in a parampara, you are as good as initiation. Your initiation has taken place. But it's you cannot call it initiation just because you are going to undergo a test whether you will be able to maintain the instructions that he has given to you for your lifetime. So there is a certain period where you have to, although you have accepted in the heart, but you have to also implement and follow that. Okay, so what about the acceptance part here? So, okay, we say that the devotee is chanting, the devotee is also doing some service. But what about acceptance? See, and that is where the knowledge part comes in, you know, knowledge. And that is the role of a guru. That is the most important role of a guru. Why do we require a guru? Because a guru gives guidance, so he can guide in multiple areas, like he gives the knowledge, the philosophy that is presented in the parampara, he will present it to us, and he wants to make sure that we realize it and we become convinced of it. That's the foundational principle of any devotee. Unless the devotee accepts the philosophy, even though externally he might be doing service, that kind of services will not have effect, because a devotee has to be convinced very thoroughly what he is doing, and he has to be able to convince others also. So his determination and his conviction has to be there. Okay, so that is very important. That's a basic principle. And after it's very that foundation has been built up, then whatever service you will do, that will be very effective. That will gain purity also. So internal cultivation and acceptance of the philosophy is very important. Okay, so now, yeah, so it is true that bhakti is not dependent on knowledge, for sure. Bhakti is only dependent on bhakti itself. Bhakti is independent, actually. It does not depend on anything, whether it is renunciation, austerity, knowledge, all these. So again, now the Uttama Bhakti, which is spoken in Nectar of Devotion, and especially Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. So that Jnan refers to philosophical speculation, which is basically directing towards the knowledge of impersonal Brahman or the knowledge of material world. Okay. And that knowledge, which is not favorable for our Krishna consciousness, that knowledge has to be rejected. Now, we accept this knowledge, as Rajiv Prabhu also pointed out, that because that is helping us to purify our sadhana, our devotional practices, whether it is chanting, whether it is hearing, whether it is reading, whatever, whether it is service, whatever devotional practices we are doing, the knowledge helps us to actually purify, because we are guided through the knowledge. And the very fact that Shravanam is also one of the limbs of bhakti, the major limb of bhakti, it's the most important limb of bhakti. And what is the role of Shravanam? Shravanam basically means that you hear and you accept it. So Shravanam does not just mean that you are just hearing, but there is no acceptance. In the heart you are not accepting anything. So Shravanam is complete when you accept the knowledge. Or you can say that it is, you know, the part of acceptance, part of completion of Shravanam is you accept it in the heart and you also practice it. So that completes Shravanam. And that is the reason Prabhupada said that chanting Kirtanam solidifies Shravanam. Okay, so now, so this question was asked to Prabhupada because there was a conversation between Prabhupada disciple and Prabhupada. So initially that lady Mataji, she asked Prabhupada that can we just chant? And just by chanting, can we attain perfection? Prabhupada said no, that chanting that you are doing is impure. It is offensive chanting. So you have to attain knowledge, and that is the reason you require Guru. So you attain knowledge from Guru, you gain knowledge from Guru, and you follow the instructions of Guru. Then chanting will become pure. Okay, so this is a fact that knowledge received from Guru will purify your chanting. Because that knowledge is required since we are conditioned and we are in ignorance. As I stated earlier also, that the starting point is that we are ignorance, because avidya is the root cause of suffering in the material world. So the Guru is providing vidya, so it can destroy the ignorance. Now that repeated knowledge is provided because we are repeatedly falling into illusion, we are repeatedly falling into avidya, into ignorance. So the Guru is providing that knowledge again and again, unless and until you are really convinced and accept it in the heart and also implement that knowledge. Okay, so then the conversation is going on at the end, this Mataji is asking Prabhupada that, okay, so if a person is deaf and dumb, then what can he do? So Prabhupada said then he can chant Hare Krishna, but he should listen to the instructions of the spiritual master. So basically the concept is that even if a person is deaf or dumb, they must somehow or other, they must hear from the spiritual master and they must realize the conclusion of the scriptures or the tattva, the siddhant. And these are very important principles. For example, we never knew who is Srimati Radharani from a tattva point of view. We knew that, okay, she is one great devotee of Krishna, but Ladini Shakti, internal energy, all these things we understood when we came to Krishna consciousness. then we start to understand that there are different types of the energies of the Lord, Shakti Tattva, Jeev Tattva, Tatastha Shakti of the Lord, Bahiranga Shakti of the Lord, and what are the characteristics of all these different types of energy of the Lord. So these basic principles every devotee must understand very thoroughly. They should realize this very thoroughly. Now, so this is actually most important, that even though a person may be blind or he may be deaf, he must be able to realize these conclusions. Now, the general principle is that the guru will provide knowledge, or he will try to somehow, in whichever form, in whichever way the disciple can understand, he will try to make that disciple understand this is the philosophy, you have to accept it. Okay, and once it is accepted, or even while doing service, while chanting the holy name, what has to be the mood, what should be the spirit, how the service should be done, these things are also provided. So these are all very essential elements, and this has to be provided to the devotee. So now let's say if there is an exceptional case where a devotee is deaf, dumb, blind, so there is no question of providing any knowledge, because he will not receive it. He cannot hear. See, if you cannot read, then you can accept it through some. You can hear knowledge. Okay, so even if you are, let's say you are blind, but because you can hear, so you have to hear it and you have to accept and you have to follow the instruction. And if you are deaf, then at least by vision you can read and you can attain instructions and you can follow the instruction. But if a person is deaf and he is also blind, then there is no scope of explaining to him what is the process of Krishna consciousness. So now in this such kind of rare situation, there are two possibilities. So in whatever case, a person has to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. They must chant the holy name. And that is the reason, out of the five limbs of bhakti, we say that the topmost, the first is chanting Hare Krishna. So now there are two possibilities, that the person has to wait till another birth, till he receives proper knowledge, or by the special arrangement of the Lord and the devotee or the guru, the chanting will reveal everything to the person. And I think that the second is very rare. It's generally, if that devotee has done something really great, wonderful, or somehow the guru is very impressed, or he wants to just be affectionate. Like for example, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the forest of Jharkhand, he just gave Krishna Prem to all the animals. So by the exceptional mercy, rare mercy of a guru or Krishna directly, a person, whether he may be blind, deaf, dumb, lame, whatever, he can also go back to Godhead. And that's a very exceptional and rare mercy of the Lord or the guru. That, they just say that, okay, may this person attain Krishna Prem. And just by chanting, that devotee can realize everything. Because chanting will reveal everything for the devotee. So that is one situation. And another situation is, the devotee has to chant the holy name as long as he is able to chant. And that chanting will purify him. And the next birth, when he definitely attain a auspicious destination, which means he can take birth in a Brahmana family or in a aristocratic family, and he will continue from previous birth. Okay, so this is actually the process. These two situations are possible for someone who is deaf, dumb, and maybe blind also. Okay, so is this clear? I mean, does it make sense? So we can say that bhakti does not depend on anything. It does not depend on any external activity, because even without receiving knowledge also one can go back to Godhead. But that is very rare case. It is very exceptional case. Because generally a person is very conditioned, or they are in ignorance. And in order to destroy the ignorance, they must receive knowledge. Okay, or if they are very, if they are very pure, then probably the chanting will reveal everything to them. So these are the only two situations which are possible. Okay, and that is the reason bhakti is always independent. It cannot be dependent on knowledge also. And why it is not dependent on knowledge? Because even, like I think even Raji Prabhu mentioned this, that even someone attains knowledge, if a person does not apply knowledge, implement knowledge, or he does not follow the instructions of the Guru, then that knowledge is a waste. We have also discussed this in our yesterday's Prabhupada Leela class, that Prabhupada very clearly wrote to one disciple that just hearing, accumulating knowledge, but not putting into practice is not going to work, because Gyan has to be converted to Vigyan. It should be converted to action. Otherwise, so this is actually the job of Mayavadis, because they are not connected with service, they are only connected with attaining knowledge. So they will just keep reading Vedas every time, you know, and they will just focus on performing yagyas and sacrifices, fire sacrifices. Okay, but so they are not concerned with the service aspect so much. They are only contained, they are basically concerned with attaining knowledge. That is their main goal. So in that sense, even if you attain lot of knowledge, you know, in bhakti, but if you don't apply that knowledge, then also it's a waste. So that is how bhakti is not dependent on knowledge. Knowledge is not going to take you back to Godhead. It is the faith and the devotional service. And obviously, according to Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, he has mentioned that we can categorize devotees in Vaidhi Bhakti in three categories, which is Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama. So see, this categorization is, in one way you will feel that this categorization itself says, like for example, you know, the symptoms of Kanishta is that he has not read scriptures, he is not thorough with scriptures. Because he has not read scriptures, his faith is very weak. So in one sense, in Vaidhi Bhakti, you can relate knowledge with faith, kind of proportional to how much knowledge you have. That's in Vaidhi Bhakti. Okay, so Rupa Goswami is categorizing the devotees depending on knowledge, and then depending on other symptoms also, he is categorizing these devotees into Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama. And Kanishta has no knowledge, Madhyama has firm knowledge, but he is not able to defeat others, and Uttama has great knowledge, and he is also able to defeat others. And it is proportional to their faith also. So the more knowledge you attain, the more your faith will also increase. That's a characteristic of Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti, so we know that, you know, Vaidhi Bhakti is what? You know, it's basically with Vidhi. So you worship the Lord with awe and reverence, or you worship the Lord with rules and regulations. So the more you attain knowledge, the more your faith will increase. But when we speak about Raganuga Bhakti, then knowledge does not have any role to play there. Because that knowledge, you know, as Raji Prabhu also said, that if you have greed for serving the Lord, then even if you don't have knowledge, but still you have enthusiasm and greed to serve the Lord, you want to serve the Lord, then automatically knowledge will be revealed to us. Okay, so this is a symptom of Raganuga Bhakti, that spontaneous devotion, that devotee right from the beginning, they just want to serve the Lord, and they are not attached to the knowledge. They are not, their faith is always strong right from the beginning. It is not dependent on knowledge at all. So this is actually very important. Now, so in our Krishna consciousness movement, we are following these two paths simultaneously, Vaidhi and Raganuga together. So and it's important to incorporate Vaidhi aspect, because not every devotee is very strong or they have strong faith in the Lord. And many people, they have joined because of some ulterior motives in the beginning, and their faith is weak also in the beginning, and because of attaining knowledge, they have increased their faith, you know. So this is how actually we can understand what is the role of knowledge in bhakti. For Vaidhi Bhakti, knowledge is very important. That's the reason faith is proportionate to the amount of Shastra that we have read. You know, the more we read the Shastra, the more our faith also increases. And so this is the characteristics of a Vaidhi Bhakta devotee, that he is dependent on Shastra or some Pramana. But for Raganuga devotees, they are spontaneous. They are not depending on any type of external knowledge. Okay, so these are the important characteristics of of devotees depending on the knowledge. But one thing is there, that certain knowledge depending on the Siddhant. So these type of knowledge is required for both Raganuga as well as for Vaidhi Bhaktas to understand the philosophical principles. Now, the greed may be there in a devotee, the enthusiasm may be there for a devotee, and the determination also will be there to serve the Lord, but it's not necessary that they might have the right knowledge or the fundamental principle, the truth about the Lord's tattva, they might not have it. So this type of knowledge is common for both Raganuga as well as for Vaidhi Bhaktas. Okay, so is this clear? Any doubt on this?
In the last part in which you said that this not understanding the tattva might be there for both, like Vaidhi Bhakti can understand, even in Raganuga Bhakti, that people might, the devotees might not have like a proper understanding of the tattva even by that level.
In Raganuga, devotee might not have understanding about what?
About the tattva, you said that they might be doing devotional service and everything, but they might not be having the...
See, there are two things here. There is faith and then there is the knowledge. Okay. In Vaidhi Bhakti, faith is proportional to knowledge. And in Raganuga Bhakti, faith is not dependent on knowledge, in the sense that the devotee has strong faith right from the beginning, that whatever the Lord will do, it is all for good. And I have natural attachment for the Lord. So I will, right from the beginning, I will serve the Lord with determination, with steadiness, with taste. Okay, that is there in Raganuga Bhakti. But the knowledge, so they are not dependent on the knowledge for their faith. But in order to gain proper knowledge, so that they can understand the tattva of the Lord, they also need knowledge. But that knowledge is not connected to their faith. The faith is already very strong. So is this clear? Whereas in Vaidhi Bhakta case, the faith is dependent on the knowledge. The more they read Shastras, the more they understand, the more, because Shastra is full of examples of devotees who have suffered. The devotees who, there are so many examples in Shastra. The more you read Shastra, the more conviction you will get, the more, whenever you are in difficulty, you may start questioning the existence of the Lord. You may doubt the Lord. So when you read the Shastra, you will understand, okay, no, the Lord is very kind. Maybe we have to have faith. So you will depend more on Shastra. Your faith will be dependent on the knowledge that you receive from the Shastra. So that's how you can say that the Vaidhi Bhaktas are, that their faith is proportional to the knowledge that they receive. And so the more Shastra they read, the more stronger the faith becomes. And that's how they advance from Kanishta to Madhyama to Uttama. So now, see, in the Bhagavatam, there is also a category of Kanishta, Uttama, Madhyama. But that category is different from the way Rupa Goswami is actually describing in the Bhakti Samrit Sindhu. These are two different categories of, it's not the same comparison. Like, Bhagavatam is describing not based on the symptoms of the Shastra or the dependence on Shastra. It is just explaining the nature of devotees according to the level of their faith. So this categorization is a different category than what is explained in the Bhakti Samrit Sindhu.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so is this clear now?
Yes, Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so Rajiv Prabhu, you had a question or a comment?
No, Prabhuji, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. So let's.
It's close to 11:30, huh? So 11:15.
So probably you had a question, but because it's getting late, you are taking it back now.
Yeah, my battery is getting down now.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I was anyways going to wind up now. So if you have question, you can ask in the next class now.
Sure. No problem.
Okay.
Sure.
So which verse we have finished? Okay, 84th. Yeah, 84th. I think we are done. Okay, all right. So thank you, devotees, for joining. So this coming, I think Aritra has arranged this coming Sunday, the second part of the seminar. So what we can do is this Prabhupada Leela class, we can have it on Saturday. And then Sunday, if you are able to attend, then you can attend the second seminar on Every Day with Srila Prabhupada. So I have already posted the yesterday's live video session in our group, SP Leela group. If devotees, if they are able, then they can see. And next session, they can attend live also. It will be on Sunday from 10 to 11 p.m. So on Saturday, I said mostly we can have our Prabhupada Leela class this Saturday. Okay.
Okay, Prabhupada.
Okay, all right. So thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanavad Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Dhanavad Pranam. Thank you.
Thank you.